Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. Because it's up to us now.
This communique will most likely be marked and destroyed shortly after it is discovered. Listen on at your own risk. The urban industrialized society that you live within is systematically destroying the environment. The Mechanopolis is destroying the planet. You have been psychologically programmed to believe that this is not happening. Pockets of resistance have been weeded out and crushed. The Anti-Hero Underground is the only existing group of resistors who have managed to survive. We subsist in the wilderness outside of the biosphere where our numbers are strong. Tactical skill has allowed us to gain ground in the war against machine culture, but that will not be enough. New recruits and patrons are needed in the struggle, or what little is left of the forest will not survive. There is not much time. The war that shapes our lives is upon us at every moment. The machines and their culture are winning. Day by day, their smokestacks spew poison into the air. At night, the stars do not shine above their electric palaces. The thieves of history would have you believe that their world, your world, is the only one which exists. This is a mistruth. We are alive and fighting.
This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
This lady died instead of the Queen.
That's so cruel.
I made £1 million worth and I was going to throw it off a building just like... But I took some out and I handed some out at a festival and people spent them and people were like, oh yeah, two beers, got the beers. Nobody noticed because... When you go like this, you can actually spin them.
How did they know?
And when that happened, it was like, holy shit, we just forged £1 million.
It's the end of the world as we know it, I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine, where proper tea is a hot beverage.
South America, Australia, Singapore. Egypt. The kid's gone completely out of control.
Why wasn't I called?
Nobody was called, sir. The banks didn't know what was happening till last week.
That's impossible.
They didn't call because it's not counterfeiting. It's something else.
Well, what is he doing?
He's making real checks, sir. These are so perfect, the airline didn't know the difference.
I am your host, The Stimulator, and this week I wish to pay tribute to all the peeps out there who have ever stolen from rich capitalists to give to the poor, to boost social movements, or simply to liberate valuable information. As many of you already know, internet activist and programmer Aaron Swartz took his own life last week. Since he left no note, people speculate that he suicided because of the 30 years in prison he faced for allegedly stealing a bunch of academic papers from JSTOR, a service that charges big bucks to access brainy works by university geeks. Apparently, Swartz's intention was to liberate all that shit so that everyone can benefit from this knowledge. Not just rich fucks in the first world. Ironically, Lawrence Lessig, author of Free Culture, and one of Swartz's biggest supporters, felt that this was morally wrong, as he is not a believer in breaking laws, even if the laws are bad ones. Well, anybody with a cushy Harvard salary like Lessig doesn't have to break any laws. They have the luxury to gangsta chill and mentally masturbate about intellectual property and shit. But we all know that Lessig's argument is bullshit. And I am willing to bet my right eye that Lessig would have supported people breaking the law to liberate slaves back in the day. But to bring it back to this era, what if one of those papers that Swartz allegedly stole held the key to the cure of AIDS? Would Lessig still feel that that was morally wrong to liberate? You know what I say? Fuck the law. Anyway, Freedom fighters through our history have been stealing shit to survive and to help comrades out. Most people would reference Robin Hood, but there's the bandit queen in India, who not only took revenge on the assholes who gang raped her, but who would redistribute the wealth she and her crew stole with members of her caste. And then there's Lucio Urtubia, a motherfucking anarchist bricklayer who robbed banks, falsified passports, and flooded the world with so many counterfeit traveler's checks that he brought Citibank to its knees. Even though this badass revolutionary criminal is revered around the world, anyone can drop into his pad in Paris and kick it with him. So I bought a bottle of wine and did just that. So in honor of all the peeps who rob, forge, pirate, pilfer, loot, and offer total disregard for the motherfucking laws made by slave masters and greedy capitalists. You know, the Aarons, Bradleys, Tims, Julians, Bonnets, Jeremys of the world. I bring you an extended interview with this living legend. Hey Lucio, how the fuck are you?
Pues muy bien.
So when did you start your life of crime?
Desde niño, porque no tenía nada.
Since I was a kid, because I had nothing. How was I to respect the law when we had nothing? Society gave me everything that I am. So the Catholic nuns tried to educate me, and even though I was young, I knew that what they were teaching me was garbage. And from that moment, I stopped believing in the church, or whatever else they were trying to brainwash me with.
Y entonces ahí pues ya no creo en la iglesia, no creo en todo lo que querían inculcarme.
And I would do small robberies. When they caught me, I would go to jail because my mom couldn't pay the fines. Later, I graduated to contraband on the French border with my brother. And around then, most of the smugglers were anarchists, who were totally against Franco's regime. Later, I joined the military. And being that I was so poor, I was blown away to see that the army had surpluses of all kinds of goods. And I began stealing everything I could, anything of value, watches, boots, shirts, and I would sell that for whatever I could.
Pues allí había vagones de todo. Y empecé a sacar todo lo que podía de allí, lo que podía sacar de...
But what I stole was very little compared to what the officers robbed. But one day I had to go AWOL. And I escaped to France and became a political refugee. Because back then, people who stole from the state were sentenced to death. So it was in France that I met with the anarchists.
Anarchists?
En la historia, los anarquistas son los creadores.
You see, in history, the anarchists are the creators of the social society, to put it one way. From the Chicago martyrs to the Paris Commune, to the massive anarchist movement in Spain.
Hubo un movimiento anarquista enorme.
They were crazy. They wanted to change the world. It's unexplainable. People like to talk about the anarchists in Catalonia and Madrid, but the collectives and the groups that wanted to change the world and who were changing the world were spread all over Spain.
Toda colectividad entre ellos, que fueran carpinteros, que fueran...
Everything was collectivized, from carpenters to construction workers to farmers. Everything functioned in a self-organized fashion. And the whole world had to intervene. France, England, Italy, and Germany, they all meddled to stop that movement. The one movement that imagined another way of living.
When we return, Lucio tells us about the power of the printing press. Get paid, you can get down, but you can't be afraid. Let's go to the DMV and get an ID. The name says you, but the face is me. Now it's your turn, take my paperwork. Like 1, 2, 3, let's make it work. Then fill out the credit card application, and it's gonna be about 3 weeks of waiting for American Express, Discovery Card, Platinum, Visa, MasterCard. Cause when we was spooked and shit, then we was targets. Now we just walk right up and say, charge it. So, Lucio, tell me about the money forgeries you were able to pull off.
Eso no es nada, el dinero no es nada, eso es secundario.
Oh, that's nothing. The money is not that important. It's secondary. The graphic arts have always been in the hands of the anarchists. The graphic arts are about spreading knowledge, particularly literary knowledge, cultural knowledge. Before I started forging money, I built 9 print shops in this neighborhood. I am not a printer. I'm a bricklayer, but all the people around me seem to like me. So the first thing we did was to make fake IDs. Once we had fake Spanish identities, that opened the doors to rent cars, to rent apartments, to open bank accounts, to cheat, to lie, to steal, to do 1,000 things. When you have good professionals, you can make documents that look as good as what the government prints out. You also need good gear, or better than the government's. Once we saw the success of our Spanish ID forgeries, and that they facilitated a bunch of things for us, we started printing IDs for other countries. If an Argentinian man wanted to be from Chile, we could do that. If a Chilean wanted to be from Galicia, we could also do that. If a French person wanted to be from Spain, we could do that too. Basically, we have more means than the governments of the world, because it's just a piece of paper. It's just paper.
Papel nada más. Todo eso es un papel. Descubrimos que
we discovered that with the type of printing we were capable of, we could forge checks from multinational companies and foundations. And this is the first bite we took out of capitalism. We didn't know what we were doing. We learned by doing, with our ideals and our enthusiasm. That's why I believe that society can be changed, when you believe that nothing's impossible.
Por eso yo creo que se puede cambiar la sociedad.
So we aimed a little higher and started faking traveler's checks from the Spanish Central Bank and the Banco Bilbao. And we took a massive bite in a few places. Then we became more ambitious. And we successfully forged the American dollar. And we were just about ready to move forward with a print run. The dollar was easier to counterfeit than 1,000 of the things that we were already faking. But our lawyers told us to be extra careful, because if we were caught making fake dollars, they gave us 20 years in prison, while our other forgeries only carry 5 years in the jail.
Los abogados nos dijeron que había que tener mucho cuidado.
So we opted to forge traveler's checks from Citibank, the biggest bank in the world, with 45,000 branches. So we did it, and we started exchanging it everywhere. Our team consisted of revolutionary Tupamaros, Chileans, Argentinas, comrades from all the countries in America, from the Basque Country, from Direct Action in France, Italians, Germans. We were 30 groups spread all over the world, working these fake checks. But one day the bank realized that something wasn't adding up. They sent a global alert to all its branches, ordering them to stop cashing Citibank traveler's checks for the full value. That they will only give $10 for any amount of dollars in traveler's checks.
Pero los días que queríamos trabajar. Y claro, pues llegó cierto día.
So, for example, people bought the Citibank check with real dollars. German would spend real marks to get the same checks. And the Spanish would exchange pesetas for the Citibank checks. And when they went to the bank to cash them, let's say $1,000 in traveler's checks, the bank would say, no, we can only give you 10 bucks. And so people would find that their money was not worth anything, and they would lose faith in the dollar and on the Citibank traveler's checks.
La gente llegó a dudar del dólar, del traveler's check, de la Ford Nacional Citibank.
After the break, how a global network got mega gangsters of Citibank to comply with the demands of an anarchist bricklayer.
We are Legion.
We are anonymous.
Distributed denial of service to bob the stack or drag when DOS attacks. Suits without a head get scared and shit they slash. See what we lack, a sense of compassion. A justice must be swift. I'll turn the hurt in the pockets of white supremacists. These nemesis is never this vicious. We troll the net for missions. Evil's your position. Your files gonna come up missing. What about they disinvesturing and speaking out of fear? Super consciousness, our warriors are virtual bombardiers. We don't forget, we don't forget. Expect us wars and no one to protect us. Come together as a legion, internet unite, connect us.
And we're back. Hey Lucio, how the fuck did you get caught when you were rocking the traveler's checks?
Vosotros, los periodistas, no se encuentran más, no les gusta más que las chorradas de
arte. You journalists are only interested in sensational stories that involve guns. When the life of a syndicalist, of a revolutionary, is about much more than that.
Okay, I'll shut the fuck up. Go on, please.
El cocinero de la cárcel de Segovia, este hombre.
The cook for the jail in Segovia, who was a criminal, one morning stole 5 million Spanish pesetas. And so he tells the anarchist syndicate of the CNT that he has no use for this money, so he's donating it to them.
For me, this generous act of a criminal is a tremendous show of honesty, and so the cook earned my sympathies. One day, the cook calls me and tells me that he's got a deal where I could sell our Citibank forgeries at 30% of its real value. And I tell him to come to Paris to see what we can work out. And we meet with an American man who I didn't trust from the get-go. But this American knew revolutionary history better than me. He was well-versed in the Russian Revolution, on the Chicago Martyrs, May Day, the Spanish Revolution, the Commune. Yeah.
La historia de Chicago, de los mártires de Chicago.
I observed him for a couple of weeks to see if I could trust him. Finally, we made a plan to make the first exchange. He would give me a suitcase of real dollars, and I would give him the same value plus 30% in fake traveler's checks that looked as real as their dollars. So we successfully do the first exchange. But there was something fishy.
Yo le daría una maleta mucho más a 30% de...
After a week or 10 days, we decided to do another exchange. So we met for breakfast. But we couldn't finish our food because we were surrounded by 30 cops, armed with machine guns. And they nabbed me with a suitcase full of dollars. So they take me to the Ministry of the Interior. And there the cops, in a polite manner, will congratulate me because I had not committed a crime. I had not done anything wrong. It was not a dirty action. It was a beautiful thing to rob a bank, the biggest bank in the world. It's something extraordinary. It's an honor, indeed. So they stick me in jail. But then I get out to go to court, and the first day in court was postponed. On the second day, these well-dressed strangers approach me to say hello, and then my lawyer rolls up and says,
Lucio, es que has conocido la gente, esa gente elegante que te ha saludado.
You know the elegant gentleman who just said hi to you? They represented Citibank, and they wanted to cut a deal. And so I agreed. Then in walks in a man from Scotland Yard that dealt with bank fraud. So I approach a Scotland Yard man. But at this point, I didn't know who he was. And I stretch out my hand and he says, I don't greet criminals. And I say, criminals? I shit on your God. I am no criminal. You are the real criminals with your money. All you know how to do is corrupt the world. You are the real criminals and manipulators of millions of people with your so-called dollars.
Criminales y los actores de millones de personas por los dólares y con los dólares.
But regardless, you'll do whatever you want. If you want to solve your problem with the forgeries, we can solve it. But if not, your problem will continue as before. But if you want to end this, you will have to give us what we want. And of course, they were not expecting this. But in the end, they accepted my demands. So the deal was, we had to give back our material. I didn't give it all up, but we stopped printing the checks. I gave my lawyers a few things, the printing plates, fake checks, and he went to the negotiation with all the items I mentioned and exchanged everything that I demanded. The lawyer rolled up with a couple of suitcases and traded all my stuff, and the Americans gave him a bunch of money. And that's the story of the negotiation between David and Goliath.
Americanos le dieron pues el dinero bueno. Y esa es la negociación David contra Goliath.
Thanks, Lucio. And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine. Stay tuned to Stimulator.tv in the coming weeks, as I will be posting the entire interview with this inspiring revolutionary. Thanks to Sara, Miguel, and Paul for helping with the translation. I also owe much gratitude to the following slaves who bestowed real currency, whatever the fuck that is, to help pay the bills and shit. Matthew, Ian, Seymour, Justin, Daryl, Don, Joy, Greg, Chad, Barbara, Michael, Edward, Otis, Ray, Jan, Kevin, Tyler, Aim, Daniel, Kalen, Martin, Sonia, and Little Dove, Insurgencia. And finally, to quote black revolutionary H. Rap Brown, we did not make the laws of this country. We are neither morally nor legally confined to those laws. Those laws that keep them up, keep us down.
Fuck a bank, break banks, I run in the bank, I stick a shank in the bank, I think, quit banks, print cash like Carter, big bang, think tanks, just think banks, bang, they're taking everything, yeah, national debt, don't cut checks.
El documental existe. Lo vas a comprar, te las vas a arreglar para comprarlo y volar.
There's a film about my life, and here's what I want you to do. You are going to buy it, and there you're going to copy it and pirate it.
Eradication. Eradication. Annihilation. Eradication, annihilation, degradation. Sometimes it makes me wonder why, but I ain't gonna sit back and cry. Gonna go out there and show you care, cause we can make a difference everywhere. When the hammer comes down, plead no jurisdiction to the white laws full of restrictions, inflictions. Cause white Australia's got a black history that never ceded sovereignty. Never ceded sovereignty.
What kind of hero was Captain Cook? And where's the genocide in the history book? Steal the children, raise their wives, then make sure there's no blacks alive. Claim the shores, take the land, make no attempt to understand. Intercept without respect, 200 years later still no regret. No apology, no sorry, end of story. Does this represent your white British glory?
Everyone part of the struggle for land rights. Fight the genocide. No respect for white law on black land. Shame at the bloodstains on sacred sand. Peace to this country's native tribes. Respect to indigenous people worldwide. Worldwide.
see the Labour Party coming to power in the next election. Maybe, maybe not, who knows? But it doesn't really make any difference who's in power. The state remains the same. The structure's still there. They just tinker a little bit here and there. But it doesn't really make any difference who's in power. The state remains the same. The structure's still there. They just tinker a little bit here and there.
Tune in to Autonomous Action Radio, 4ZZZ Anarchy Show, every Monday from 12 to 1 p.m. on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM or streaming at 4ZZZFM.org.au. Good afternoon and welcome to the Anarchy Show. It's 20 minutes after 12 o'clock. And first up today, we heard the latest episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine. And that was a really interesting interview. I'm going to have to listen to it a few times, I think, to really sink in exactly what the guy did to manage to bring the bank to its knees. My name's Linda, and joining me in the studio first up is Morgan. How are you going, Morgan?
Good, thanks, Linda. Thanks for having me on here.
No worries. And Morgan's going to talk to us about, with us, about the Zapatistas. We've also got a guy called Rob, who Wave's going to talk to about some actions against coal mines that have happened recently. And that's all happening because on Wednesday night we've got the Colonial Collapse at 199 Boundary Street, West End, upstairs. And we'll be having hearing from Sakura and Testament from Test Their Logic. And they'll be presenting, first of all, a presentation called The True Cost of Coal. So that's what we're talking about coal today. But first of all, we're going to talk about the Zapatistas. And Morgan, you wrote a essay. Actually, we're not just talking about the Zapatistas, because we're going to talk about the Shack Dwellers too. First of all, just tell us about your essay that you wrote.
Oh, well, basically, I wrote most of it for my honours thesis way back in 2010. It seems forever ago now. And the basic argument I put forth, and the Zapatistas and also the Shack Dwellers are part of this broader thing that I think is happening around the world, and that social movements are rejecting the state as an agent of change, whereas, you know, traditional movements, they've been Marxist and Leninist, and they've tried to take over the state and then use the state to change things. These movements reject the state in that process of radical change.
And so with the Zapatistas, you've found that there's many anarchist influences in their organising. And first of all, we're going to talk about the history of the Zapatistas.
Yeah, the history, I think, sort of explains why they wouldn't want to engage with the state and they wouldn't want to try and use it as this agent of change. And their story sort of starts around the 1980s, before they came into the public eye. And Marcos and the band of rebels that he sort of took down to Chiapas, where the Zapatistas are, they originated as Maoists and Leninists. And for those people that don't know, they're very hierarchical sort of social groups and social movements. And they went into the communities and saw this process as, oh, you know, we'll take over the state and we'll change things from there. But they came into contact with these communities and the communities didn't want that. And what's more than that, the sort of indigenous politics of the area rejected this sort of hierarchical political practice and this violence that comes with taking over the state. And it's that sort of transformed their practice from one that was really hierarchical to one that was a lot more democratic and a lot more anti-state.
So they spent many years talking to people and organising within the community and getting allies in the community before the day on 1994 when they came out?
Yeah, they spent 8 or 9 years discussing with people in the communities and becoming part of the communities and integrating themselves and basically learning what the people want and integrating political processes with that. And, you know, when NAFTA was launched on the same day as the Zapatista uprising began.
The North American Free Trade Agreement.
Yeah, exactly. The Free Trade Agreement, that was sort of the last straw. And the Zapatistas came out and said, you know, enough is enough. You know, capitalism's destroying our livelihoods. It's destroying our capacity for a free and equal life, a free and happy life, basically.
And so the Zapatistas, so that there's some outside people who aren't indigenous, but it involves a lot of indigenous people now.
Yeah, it's, you know, you had Marcos and a few others that came from the northern parts of Mexico and Chiapas is in the south. and they sort of came down there and they were trying to impose revolution initially, and they started listening and integrating themselves with those communities instead of imposing themselves. Yeah.
So what are the aspects of anarchist organizing do they employ?
Oh, well, I think the main one that at least I've identified is their rejection of the state as an agent of change. And that was sort of this notion that the state is the central agent of change was at the core of most social movements, at least through the middle of the 20th century. And you can see that in the Soviet Union, you can see that in China, Cuba, a lot of other countries around the world as well, and even communist parties in Australia and the like, where they sort of, they wanted to take over the state, and then after they were successful in doing that, you know, they'd suppress the counter-revolution and eventually bring us this free, equal sort of era.
That's interesting, because there's a debate happening with the Idle No More in Canada, and some of it is reformist.
Mm.
Because of the band chiefs involved, who are actually they're connected with the government, and so there's this debate sort of happening between what the grassroots people want and then the band councils, and Teresa Spence is the main one who actually they do work with the government, so it is kind of reformist.
Oh, okay.
Mm. It's almost 12:30. You're listening to 4ZZZ Autonomous Action Radio, and we might go to a song now, and then we'll come back. And as well as the Zapatistas, there's another group to talk about, and Morgan's going to be talking about the Shack Dwellers, and in future weeks or months he's going to be talking about other non-reformist radical social movements. We're going to hear from Steve Towson and the Kunkala Station Band and Jim Jones at Botany Bay.
Oh, listen for a moment, lads, and hear me tell me tale how over the seas from England shore I was condemned to sail. The jury says he's guilty, sir, and says the judge says he. For like Jim Jones, I'm sending you across the stormy seas. And take my tip before you ship to join the island gangs. Don't get too gay at Botany Bay, or else you'll surely hang. Says he, and after that Jim Jones, high up on the gallows trees, the crows will peck your bones. You'll have no chance for mischief then, remember what I say. They'll flog the poaching hide of you down there at Botany Bay. The waves were high up on the seas, the winds blew down in gales. I would rather drown in misery than come to New South Wales. The waves were high upon the seas, the pirates came along. But the soldiers on our convict ship were full 500 strong. They opened fire and somehow drove that pirate ship away. I would rather join those buccaneers than come to Botany Bay. For night and day our irons clang like poor galley slaves. We toil and when we die must build this honored grave. Oh, by and by I'll break a chain, into the bush I'll go, and join the bold bush rangers that Jack Donahue and co. And some dark night when everything is quiet in the town, I'll shoot the tyrants one and all, I'll shoot the bastards down. I'll give the law a little shot, remember what I say. They'll yet regret that they sent Jim Jones in chains to Botany Bay.
And That was Steve Tazan in the Concala Station Band and Jim Jones at Botany Bay. And the song we heard first off today was Combat Wombat and White Australia. So I guess so far we're having a bit of a anti-colonial theme for the show leading up to Australia Day, Invasion Day this Saturday. It's just before 25 minutes to 1 o'clock, and we're talking with Morgan Rogers Gibson today about the Zapatistas, but also we're going to widen it out and talk about other kind of anti-state movements. And there's another movement that you talked about, and you can pronounce the name.
Yeah, it's not an easy one to pronounce. Abishlali Base Myondolo. And that basically means shack dwellers.
And the shack dwellers are in the Pacific kind of area?
No, they're in South Africa.
South Africa, actually. Okay.
Yeah. In Durban is the main area as well, yeah.
And so tell us why these people are interesting.
Well, I think similar to the Zapatistas, originally when Nelson Mandela and the ANC took power, which is still the ruling party of South Africa, they promised these people who were living in shacks, these sort of destitute shacks with no running water, no electricity, none of those things we take for granted, really. They sort of promised, we'll get you out of this position, we'll get you out of poverty, we'll rise you up out of poverty. And again, they promised this sort of transformative change in a similar way that the Zapatistas were promised it by the Mexican state. And really, it's just never happened. Instead, the police have constantly oppressed the population there. Every time they've sort of tried to march or struggle for change, people have been shot, people have been killed, fires have ravaged a lot of the shacks time and time again. So it's really horrible situation there, and I guess they just said enough is enough, a lot like the Zapatistas did.
And what sort of their current position or...
Well, and this is one of the reasons why I say these aren't anarchist movements, because they don't march around saying we're anarchist, you know, because there's obvious reasons for that. Anarchism has a bad name. It's associated with chaos. Rather, I say they're anarchical because they sort of have adopted these anti-state positions. But at the same time, and I think this is something any political actor has to do, they work within the confines of the state as well. So they will try and, you know, their overarching and their long-term strategy is to get rid of the state and to get rid of capitalism. But, you know, while there's structures there that they can try and struggle with as well, they use them. So they try and launch constitutional appeals and things like that just to prevent their oppression. But they also do these more radical things like trying to get themselves outside of the state and live autonomously from the state and so on.
So the Zapatistas, they connect with a lot of media and social groups. So we hear a lot about them and statements from them, and their general history, there's anarchism through it that we can see. Do the shack dwellers...
Well, they've definitely set up directly democratic structures in their own communities, and they explicitly contrast these to the more hierarchical and sort of undemocratic way that the state organises and the state interacts with them. And they've explicitly opposed, they sort of call their politics a people's politics. And this is something that they say is explicitly directly democratic, is explicitly anti-hierarchical. And I think this lines up with a lot of anarchist theory, which tries to pursue the same sorts of things. And they're explicitly anti-capitalist as well. They have a lot of problems with neoliberalism and all those sorts of things.
Great. So how could we find out more about the shack dwellers?
There's actually a website. I think it's just called abishlali.org. A-B-H. I'll just spell that. Might be better. abahlali.org.
But you were saying that there's been a movie as well.
There has been a movie. There's a documentary that there's an Australian premiere coming up on January 30 at 6 p.m. and it's at the auditorium of the Trades Hall in New South Wales. It's in Sydney, unfortunately. But it's 4 Goldburn Street, Sydney, and it's hosted by the Union Aid Abroad program.
And do you know what the film's called?
It's called Dear Mandela.
Okay.
And it sort of charters their journey through the constitution, through the courts and through constitutions, just trying to make sure that police are basically unoppressing them. They sort of have challenged the state through the courts just to stop police oppression of when they go out and march in the streets and even in their own communities where the police often come in and they're quite violent.
Okay, so maybe other people can track down that movie.
Yeah, it's called Dear Mandela, and it's the website is dearmandela.com. So
okay, yeah, that sounds fairly easy. Thanks very much for coming in today, Morgan, to speak to us on the Anarchy Show. It's 25 minutes to 1 o'clock, and we're going to go to a song now from Dylan Quint. Dylan Quint, who I played a few weeks ago, and then we'll be talking with Rob about some actions against coal which have happened recently.
Check this out.
Ranger.
You're listening to Autonomous Action Radio on 4ZZZ 102.1 FM.
This song is for those that think that people should be enslaved, to spend most of the time that they're awake earning a wage, and locked in with debt and the threat of poverty just like a cage. Your time as master is up, cause what about to turn the page? What are you gonna do when the cops realize that they're being pieces of shit, assaulting people with pepper spray even when they peacefully sit? When it comes to people abused by the system, billions example, to assume that when the cops wake up that'd be the time that you get trampled. There's already cops that realize that they are a disgrace, the shame of humanity, because they have turned against the human race. And how lost would you have to be to defend those with all the wealth, while fellow human beings don't even have enough to support good states of health? It's time to end neglect and poverty in every single country by smashing state capitalism to bits like Humpty Dumpty. Then all the king's horses and all of the king's men are gonna wonder why they're protecting the dehumanizing corporate rulers in the end, while everyone else wonders why the hell they should work their ass off just to pay back a bank run by some selfish fucking assholes. Profiteering is ruining the environment and you've almost completely wrecked it. And kids are disturbed because people work too much, so they're neglected. People are sick and suicidal and their homes are a mess because the class structure's wrong and it causes way too much fucking stress. Banks make money out of nothing and then they lend it out, and then you lose your freedom trying to pay back, and if you can't, they claim your house. Our lives are characterized by being continuously raunted, and we function with value systems that are severely distorted. A lot of people in the world, the cops and the people in the army, have had their brains minced and molded kinda like salami, and their view of the world has been bent and twisted like origami, so to move them might be difficult as if they've gone and lost their car keys. But people have an innate nature which is helpful, supportive and good, so maybe it's only a matter of time before people realize and do what they know they should. Exhibit equality, which this civilization tends to be lacking. Responsibility for all life, also known as compassion. Politicians represent the rich while bathers feed us poop, while we pay tax to fund murder done by brainwashed amassed troops. People are stressed to the point that they're about to fucking snap, if you wanna rape the earth until total ecological collapse. There's too many people waking up for us to lose the mission, so why don't you wise up and try to assist with a smooth transition into a world where we can actually try to get it right and integrate humanity into the interdependent web of life. We live in a social structure where crime is induced, cause lawmakers don't eliminate poor conditions from where crime's produced. It's funny that you think that you're actually gonna come out on top when you're ripping off like 99% of the entire population. It's a joke that people are broke while cops surround you like a moat. The truth will float to the surface, so I guess you can call this song a boat. This heartless civilization that you rule is doomed, and soon people will realize exactly what it means to be human then.
We're going on to talk about coal now, and Waves here with Rob in the studio.
Hey.
G'day.
You might have heard in other general media about somebody
over a New South Wales mine doing a campaign, doing an action against a mine. So, yeah, Rob's got all the lowdown on that to inform us if we don't know about it.
Yeah, okay, so basically someone's released a media statement posing as the chief environmental manager of ANZ. They've done that, the media's picked it up, only one paper actually called to fact check that, and they caused a momentary drop in the share price of ANZ, something to the tune of $350,000 or something like that.
Mm-hmm, wow. And so that clearly then had an impact on the ANZ Bank.
Yeah, most certainly.
And why have they targeted the ANZ Bank?
They've got a $1.2 billion line in credit that they've loaned Whitehaven Coal to basically create a new open pit coal mine, about 2,000 hectares in the Leard State Forest.
Yep, which is?
In northern New South Wales.
Yep. This person has, objection to that mine, which is in a special area.
Yeah, it's in primarily a box gum sort of forest, which is federally listed as a critically endangered ecosystem. It's also home to a bunch of endangered animals. The other thing is that two of the mines aren't required to rehabilitate the land at all afterwards, which basically means they're going to leave a big open pit lake, which is going to drain the water table for about 1,000 years. This is the mining company's own data.
Yep. Wow. So you mentioned the hoax, but and the loss of money, but that got found out, and so they've basically recouped their money from that.
Yeah, I mean, it was blown out of proportion by the media as to how much money it initially cost. But it's basically it's a first in Australia for this sort of action to occur. And ASICS, which is the Australian Securities and Investment Commission, are pretty much trying to create a situation where if this sort of thing happens again, there'll be very heavy penalties, like most likely jail time.
Because usually it's just about someone trying to creating a false thing so they can make money out of it.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at other protests, the money that it's cost over the period of a different blockade is actually a lot more than $350,000. It's not a big value. It's more the form that it's taken and the potential that it could have in future actions.
Yep. That's in the courts now, so we're not talking too much detail about it, but... Yeah. We'll see how that pans out. And where can people then find out about the this particular campaign for that forest and this action?
There's an organisation called FLAC, which stands for Frontline Action on Coal. They're heavily sort of involved in it. And you can also get on Facebook. There's another webpage called someofus.org that are doing a petition that people can sign. Mm-hmm. So basically we're looking for people to close their ANZ account because of their investments. They've made a promise not to invest in dirty energy, and they've broken that promise, and they've done so behind everyone's backs. So it's a betrayal of the very customers they're there to serve.
It's all love, baby. Yeah. Check it out. Yo, I got love for you, no matter what you got for me. We share a godfather, so it's good, fellas. Now what happened in the past doesn't matter. I forgive you, brother. And if you fall in the future, I will pick you up. No matter what you got for me, we share a godmother, so it's good, sisters. If disaster come to pass, I'll be with you. Listen, I got love for you. It's all for love, let's get it straight. I feel great often. We got some obstacles we're facing, but I stay optimistic and I remain conscious. All that I wanted in this world was more love, so I gotta give it up. I love the homies who will always be supportive of me, and I got love for folks who never ever got love for me. For the oldest overlords in their top positions, and the homeless girls and boys without a pot to piss in. We gotta keep our veins pumping if we gon' be living. Mahatma said you gotta be the change you wanna witness, and Martin King said I got a dream that we'll be equal. Malcolm X said the ballot or the bullet, pick one. So people heed one or the other, but I love them all, because we are each other's sisters and brothers in arms, and we don't need to be arguing. Let's be honest, it's that love that is most important, so I honor it. I got love for you, no matter what you got for me. We share a godfather, so it's good, fellas. Now what happened in the past doesn't matter. I forgive you, brother, and if you fall in the future, I will pick you up. No matter what you got for me, we share a godmother, so it's good, sister.
sisters. If disaster come to pass, I'll be with you. Listen, I got love for you. It's all for love. We all want love. We all got love. Let's make a promise now to never keep it bottled up. Let's figure out exactly how much we all got in common, and then acknowledge we got problems that we all could solve. We gotta come together somehow, cause I've been wondering for a couple years how we all gonna come down. The trouble is, everybody covers up the love within and substitute it for some toxic mimics. Why we still got slavery? It makes me sick. We bombed the foreign kids. Man, what they ever gone and did to us? When all the world's organisms only wanna form bonds with some other creatures that's important to them. How do we ever get the picture that we're different from the rocks and the rivers and the frogs and the porpoises? There's only one small thing we gotta give up that'll stop this apocalypse. Yeah, it's mad love. So, no matter what you got for me, we share a godfather, so it's good, fellas. And what happened in the past doesn't matter. I forgive you, brother. And if you fall in the future, I would pick you up. No matter what you got for me, we share a godmother, so it's good, sisters. If disaster come to pass, I'll be with you. Listen, I got love for you. It's all for love. Yeah, yeah, it's all for love.
And we have Kelso on the line, who's down in Tasmania. You've arranged a bit of a campaign that happened yesterday. Tell us about it.
Pretty much tried to draw people's attention to the fact that ANZ unethically funding coal mining by making their ATMs out of order in as many locations as possible.
So yeah. where has that been?
We managed to hit Brisbane, Melbourne, Sydney, ACT, Adelaide, Hobart, Newcastle, and even Wauchope. And I can't forget Port Macquarie.
Yep. So people have basically put out of order signs onto ATMs.
That's it. Yeah, just a really simple sign, but has a very strong message.
And how's that message got across then? Is that making a financial impact onto ANZ?
I don't know. I hope that it affects their operations and it makes them take notice.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, at the end of the day, that's what they're going to respond to.
Sure.
Affecting their bottom line. But I guess it's largely a campaign to make people aware and just to make people ask the question, why are we doing this? Yeah.
Yep, and so you've sent then press releases and things through to ANZ and elsewhere?
We haven't sent anything to ANZ, but yeah, certainly sent a press release out to a lot of media.
Yep. And then people can see this going on. Is it something you want to, may even continue?
Yeah, that's been suggested on the Facebook page today that we continue it. I guess I don't want to drag it out and really piss people off too much. It might lose its effectiveness. But I think ANZ needs to know that we will keep challenging them if they're going to keep being irresponsible like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what? Where is that Facebook page?
Okay, the Facebook page is called Out of Order.
Just type in Out of Order in that little Facebook search thingy.
Yeah, if you type in Out of Order, it might need to scroll down a little bit to find it. Otherwise, if you want to find out more about ANZ's unethical investments, you can try finding the Facebook page We Stand With Jonathan.
We Stand With Jonathan.
There's a lot of people kind of backing Jonathan, and we're trying to build an online hub to support there to just support him personally, and also to you know, keep the pressure on ANZ not to fund coal mines and not to wipe out koala habitat.
Yeah, well, great. Thanks for that, Kelso. Good job. Keep it up.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Appreciate it.
And I just had a message from Brad from Six Degrees, the Friends of the Earth Collective, and he says that ANZ are also advising GVK Hancock on financing for their mega coal mines and the expansion of Abbott Point, which is threatening the Great Barrier Reef. And they also provide loans for all the major coal miners, including Rio Tinto, Xstrata, BHP and Peabody, and also for coal seam gas ports at Gladstone. And Brad from 6 Degrees will be there on Wednesday night for our Colonial Collapse gig at 199 Boundary Street West End. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Katso, and all the best with further actions. You've been listening to Autonomous Action Radio. For more information about the show, you can go to autonomousactionradio.com or 4ZZZFM.org.au.
All your hope, when there's no one to help you find where to go. Don't have to look far, you know where I am. I'm waiting at the end of the road, waiting at the end of the road. We're traveling, don't feel alone. No matter how far you are from your home, 'cause when you look up ahead, you'll know where I am. I'm waiting at the end of the road, waiting at the end of the road. And the places I go and the songs that I sing, the rules that I break and the people I meet, I've got a name, one you can repeat. But I'm waiting at the end of the road, waiting at the end of the road. I'll try just about anything to make you turn back and be their machine. They'll shackle your feet and they'll shackle your dreams. They say you're as free as can be. Say you're as free as can be. The lost says don't take one more step on the road to a place where ideas are not set. But I say run and leave it all behind. Run till there's no running left. Run till there's no running left. And whatever you think and whatever you want, whatever you need and whatever you've got, you've got a right to be who you are. And don't let them take it away. Yeah, don't let them take it away.